Kumiranda Shaganjana Slakya Chaksura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So he was born in a place called Srikanda, and his brothers were Mukunda Das, Madhava Das, and Narahari Das. And he's a major branch of the Chaitanya tree. Just one interesting story that has nothing to do with Narahari Saraka Thakura is that in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it describes that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to make fun of the people who were born in Srikanda because they had a little bit of different accent. And so he would imitate them and make fun of them. And sometimes they would get so angry with him, they would run after him to catch him, to hit him. But it's described that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu usually would be able to run so fast that nobody would catch him. And also it's described that even if they did catch him, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's students would somehow or other placate those who were attacking Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But from the reading of the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it appears that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite a feisty young man, and tricky, and sarcastic sometimes, and attacking people with his word jugglery. Quite an interesting pastime, which is, it's very similar to Krishna's pastimes in Gokul, in that Krishna did things in a little different way. It wasn't so much engaged in word jugglery, he was stealing things and aggravating people. So Lord Chaitanya was also aggravating people in that way. Because you may say, why was he doing such a thing? Because when the Lord does such a thing, then people start thinking of him more. And that was Lord Chaitanya's trick, to make people think of him more, to make people chant the Lord's holy names. Anyway, so Narahari Sarakara Thakur was born or appeared in Srikanda. And he was a major branch of the Chaitanya tree. And in Krishna Lila, he is known as Madhumati, which is the name of a dear gopi friend of Srimati Radharani. And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings of Narahari Sarakara Thakur in his famous Gora Arti song. He says, Narahari Arikori Chamaradulaya. The Narahari is panning Lord Chaitanya with his chamara. So he's quite well accepted. Let's see what else other information we have. And actually, and the songs of Narahari Sarakara Thakur are contained within the Bhakti Ratnakara, which was written by Narahari Chakravarti. And so they're both called Narahari. And he's written many songs about Lord Chaitanya's Leela. So this Bhakti Ratnakara is actually a very important book in the Vaishnava heritage, literature heritage. And so the devotees are invited to read this. And Lochan, he is the spiritual master of Lochan Das Thakur, who was written for before the birth of Lord Chaitanya. Many different ragas were written by Narahari, which sang of Raja Ras. And he also wrote songs about Lord Chaitanya, which I mentioned before. He passed away on this day, which is called the Krishna Kadasi in this month, Krishna Kadasi. So, of course, there's the Gora Kadasi and the Krishna Kadasi. I'll explain what that means. Krishna Kadasi is when things are getting darker because the moon is getting smaller because of, anyway, Rahu, or the scientists say because of the shadow caused by the earth. And then that's Krishna Kadasi, and then Gora Kadasi is when the moon is actually getting bigger and bigger and bigger and ends up with the Purnima. You got that? Okay. And the Purnima is the beginning of the next month. Okay, so now we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 5th chapter, text 25. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Mato Api Anantat Parataha. Parasmat. Swarga Pavarga Dipater. Na Kinchit. Yesham. Kim. U. Syad. Itarena. Tesham. Akinchananam. Mahi. Bhakti. Vajam Matho Pyunantat Parata Parasmat I'll go slow. Swarga Pavarga Di Paterna Kinchit Yesham kimu syad itarena tesham. Akinchananam mahi bhakti bhajam. Matopyanantat parata parasmat. One thing, it's Matopyanantat, not Matopi, because as I said like millions of times before, when you have the Y and a vowel and an X word, they run into one. So, Swarga Pavarga Dipaterna Kinchit.
Swarga Pavarga Dipaterna Kinchit.
Yesham Kimu Shaditarena Tesham. Akinchananam mahi bhakti bhajam. Matopyanantat parata parasmat. Swarga pavarga dipatirna kinchit. Yesham kimu syad itarena tesham. Akinchananam mahi bhakti bhajam. Okay.
Mato yananta parata parasmat.
Yeah.
Okay. Mataha.
From me.
Api.
Even.
Anantat.
Unlimited in strength and opulence.
Parata
parasmat.
Higher than the highest.
Swarga pavarga adipatahi.
Able to bestow happiness.
Obtainable by living in the heavenly kingdom.
By liberation.
Or by enjoyment of material comfort and then liberation.
Not.
Kinchit.
Anything.
Yesham.
Of whom?
Kim.
What need?
Ooh.
Oh.
Syat.
Can there be?
Itarena.
With any other?
Tesham.
Of them.
Akinchananam.
Without needs or without possessions.
Mahi.
Unto me.
Bhakti
Bhajam.
Executing devotional service.
The translation, I am fully opulent, almighty and superior to Lord Brahma and Indra, the king of the heavenly planets. I am also the bestower of all happiness obtained in the heavenly kingdom and by liberation. Nonetheless, the Brahmanas do not seek material comforts from me. They are very pure and do not want to possess anything. They simply engage in my devotional service. What is the need of their asking for material benefits from anyone else? So you can repeat, I am fully opulent. Almighty and superior to Lord Brahma.
Almighty and superior to Lord Brahma.
And Indra, the king of the heavenly planets.
I am also the bestower of all happiness.
Obtained in the heavenly kingdom.
And by liberation.
Nonetheless, the Brahmanas.
Do not seek material comforts
for
me.
They are very pure.
And do not want to possess anything.
They simply engage in my devotional service.
What is the need of their asking?
For material benefits from anyone else.
So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
The perfect brahminical qualification is stated herein. Akinchananam mayi bhakti bhajam.
The Brahmanas are always engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Consequently, they have no material wants, nor do they possess material things. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Majalila 11th chapter, text 8, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains the position of pure Vaishnavas who are anxious to return home back to Godhead.
Nikinjanasya Bhagavat Bhajam Mukasya.
Those who actually want to return back to Godhead are Niskinchana. That is, they have no desire for material comfort. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advises, Sandarshanam Vishayanam Atha Yoshitam Cha Ha Hanta Hanta Vishya Vakshanato Pyasadhu.
Material opulence and sense gratification through the association of women are more dangerous than poison.
Brahmanas who are pure Vaishnavas always engage in the Lord's service and are devoid of any desire for material gain.
The Brahmanas do not worship demigods like Lord Brahma, Indra, or Lord Shiva for any material comfort.
They do not even ask the Supreme Lord for material profit. Therefore, it is concluded
that the Brahmanas are the supreme living entities of this world. Sri Kapila Deva also confirms this in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 29th chapter, text 33. Tasman mayarpita shesha kriyartatma nirantatapa mayarpitatma mayarpitatma napunso mayasanyastakaramanapa napashyami parambhutam akartu samadarshanat. The Brahmanas are always dedicated to the Lord's service with their bodies, words, and mind. There is no better person than a Brahmana who thus engages himself and dedicates himself to the Supreme Lord. So, Matopinantat parata parasmat svargapavargadi patir nakinjit yesham kimushad terena tesham. Akinchananamahi Mahi Bhajam. So Omaganat Vidandasha Kananjana Shakya Chakshun and Miditam Yenatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So of course this verse is stressing the renunciation of the devotees. I mean by Brahmanas here, Srila Prabhupada in the verse is referring to devotees. And this is also mentioned in a prayer. There was spoken by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the famous prayer. Vairagya Vidya Nijavakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari Kripam Bhudhirya Tvam Aham Prabhaje. That Lord Chaitanya, you come to teach two things. Vairagya Vidya. Vairagya Vidya, Nijavakti, by the process of devotional service, you've come to teach renunciation from things that are not favorable to serving Krishna, and you've come to give us knowledge. Vairagya Vidya, Nijavakti Yoga. Shiksharta Eka, this is your one teaching. It's interesting. Shiksha means to teach. Shiksharta Eka, this is your, in other words, most important teaching. Of course, Bhakti Yoga and the byproducts of renunciation and knowledge. Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana. You're the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Sri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari. You have appeared in this form as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Kripam Bhuri Yastam Aham Prabhaje. Please give me your mercy and I surrender unto you. It's a very nice verse. The devotee should learn this verse. It's actually one of the most important verses. So, and also in the Bhagavatam it's stated, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Jinayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Hoitakam, which is very similar to what is spoken in the verse by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. It says, Vasudeva Bhagavati. Vasudeva means unto Vasudeva. Vasudeva, of course, is Krishna. Vasudeva is unto Vasudeva. Bhagavati, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavati, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. When performs Bhakti Yoga, which consists of the nine processes of devotional service, and does these nine processes with the idea of pleasing Krishna, as we spoke the other day about Rupa Goswami's injunctions, you must be active, not simply dreaming of serving Krishna. You must do what Krishna wants and you must do with the spirit of pleasing him. Everything. I mean, just like I was thinking like that about japa in the morning. Sometimes we just chant japa because we have to, but we should be chanting for purpose of pleasing Krishna and praying to Krishna at the same time. Anyway, bhakti yoga prayojita. And then janayati asu vairagyam. Then automatically you get vairagya. Vairagya is an interesting word. Vairagya means without the passion. Because we are very passionate to enjoy this material world. Especially nowadays that our passion is being very much stimulated by the media. I mean, when I was young, it was a little stimulation. You know, you'd watch these children's cartoons in the morning. And you'd be encouraged to buy this or do that, but Now, practically every day, especially by this process that they use, is called planned obsolescence. They stimulate you to get newer things and throw away, discard the old things. I mean, you're not even supposed to fix things anymore. In the old days, you know, something broke down, you fix it. And these days, you don't fix it. I mean, even the cell phones, many of the cell phones nowadays, they don't come with batteries that you can replace. Some of them do. I mean, the old ones do. The new ones, like the iPhones, you know, IBM iPhones, they don't. I mean, if you want to replace the battery, you have to be really a technician, pry it open. You probably break the thing in the process. And, you know, as far as fixing things, so therefore you find advertisements, you know, give us your old phones, you know, we'll pay $5 for it. You see these advertisements everywhere. Because it's just like consumption, achahara, you know, just like overeating, like overconsumption. It's like everybody has bulimia then, in a certain sense. You know, bulimia is like when you eat and you throw up.
Yeah.
You understand? And so we're doing that, like we're consuming and then throwing. Anyway, you understand the metaphorical point? You're consuming and then you throw it up. Consuming and throw it up. You never digest it, never use it for a long period of time. You just have to have the latest and the greatest, or your old one broke down and the style has changed. So that's passion. The material society is based upon stimulating passion. I mean, if we didn't consume in America, the economy would be destroyed, basically, which is really interesting. Everybody would be out of work. It's interesting. Everybody would be out of work, at least the hellish industries, and, you know, you'd have to go back to the farms, which nobody wants to do anyway. And then what would you do? Like Prabhupada, actually, Prabhupada talked about how technology creates unemployment. And for years, I never really understood that point. I was thinking, well, there's so many jobs in technology. You can sit at a computer all day long and type away. You can, so many jobs, you can figure out how to program the computer. But basically that's unemployment, because you're not really using your body, you're getting sick, because you're not really living a natural life, and you're just sitting all day long. I mean, you're unemployed. Basically, you're unemployed, even though you're getting a salary. So our modern society's point I'm making, without going too far afield, is based on overconsumption. So ragya. So a devotee is vairagya. So now I'm going to bring up a controversial point, or several controversial points. Is that why do we see that people join the Krishna consciousness movement and with the spirit of vairagya, chanting Hare Krishna, and later on the passion starts to manifest again, and they really get into it? It's interesting, you know, as young people, I remember joining the movement, and we were really into renunciation. We all slept in the same room, you know, 30 people sleeping in the same room, sharing the same bathrooms. I remember in Dallas, Texas, I was living there as a brahmachari, and there was 30 people living in one room. You didn't know who was going to be next to you when you woke up the next morning. I mean, at least it would be a man if you were living in a men's ashram. That wasn't a problem. And everybody had to be in and out of the bathroom in time for Mangalarti. And everybody got to Mangalarti. That was the amazing thing. I mean, you would think if you had one bathroom for 30 people, you know, some people are going to be waiting late for Mangalarti, but everybody was on time. Amazing. And nowadays we have one bathroom for each person. Oh, you know, maybe one for two or three. And everybody's late, if they come at all. That's pretty shocking, isn't it? And they're living, you know, many people living right next to the temple, whatever. So that's not a criticism of that particular thing. But basically, sometimes we see that people join in a spirit of renunciation, they're living really austerely, and somehow or other, the material desires manifest like 5 years, 10 years later. it's wow, they have to have a mansion and, you know, several cars. They want to move to the city. You know, not to preach Krishna, but moving to the city to preach is fantastic. But they just lose that spirit of renunciation. And of course, I'm not speaking about people who use Krishna's energy in his service. That's a different thing. You know, if you're engaged more in Yukta Vairagya, using more in Krishna's service, that's fine. But to use more in your own service, your own personal sense gratification, or you know, anyway, you lose control of your senses in a different way. Achahara payasascha, pajapa niyamagraha, engage in over endeavor. I mean, all these things benefit. So you ask, how is it that someone goes from this extreme state of renunciation? And it was very extreme. I mean, believe me, it was extremely extreme. It's interesting. To really being hankering after material opulence. And I was thinking about this. So the one reason is that the desire was there all along, but there was no opportunity to fulfill the desire. Just like sometimes you see that we may bring people from different countries to perform devotional service. And, you know, they always had the desire for material opulence. And you bring people to America, and then sometimes they get their green card, and then that's it, you know. That's the last you see them in the temple, or you see them on Sunday or something like that, because the desire was always there. It just, there was no opportunity to manifest that desire. That happens sometimes. So that's one reason that, you know, as brahmacharis, we had all these desires, but, you know, we just didn't have an opportunity. Just like the same way that one may be a little child. Let's say a little child. Children always look so pure. It's amazing. I wish people could stay like that all the time. Isn't it? You look at the children, it's so cute and pure. And what happens to the purity when they get, you know, 13, 14, 15? That purity got up and went. You know, because it was always there, but there wasn't a manifestation. You think, wow, this person has no sex desire, but, you know, as soon as the hormones are there, as soon as the opportunity is there, it starts to manifest. So that's one reason. Now, another reason is that people may actually be renounced in the beginning of taking up devotional service and really not have many desires. But then they may come for a variety of reasons. One is that they're bad association. You know, they may just like, in the name of Yukta Vairagya, try to engage more than they're capable of engaging in devotional service, or associate more with people who are not Krishna conscious. Because as Lord Chaitanya says, the first quality of a Vaishnava is satsanga jaga, Vaishnava char, to be very careful about associating with a sat. That means, Lord Chaitanya typified or explained, asat means, you know, people who are not Krishna conscious, people who are against Krishna, or even people who are, let's say, ostensibly Krishna conscious, but just interested in material aggrandizement, like Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle, who Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered to be worms in stool. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami came to join Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya said, your father and uncle are like worms in stool. Can you imagine saying that to someone about their father or uncle? I don't think I've ever said that to someone about their father or uncle or mother or what, something like that. But Lord Chaitanya could say that because they had a village relationship. He was like their, they were like uncle village relationship, or brother, cousin brother, things like that. So that's one type of asat in the name of devotional service. Someone who encourages others to engage in material aggrandizement. And another, or the other type I mentioned already, was those who were actually atheistic or against Krishna. You know, like someone said to me the other day, how can you worship that, the blue boy? You think a blue boy is God? They said that to me. It was just painful in the heart. Can you imagine that? Yeah, you know, I mean, you hear that sometimes. And Blue Boy, you know, I prefer the Brahman effulgence. That's actually much more attractive. Person said to me, I said, huh? And he said, my guru has made me vow not to meditate on anything personal. So I can't. I said, why don't you chant sometimes? He said, I've taken a vow not to chant the personal form of God. I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, I've never taken a vow not to meditate on the Brahmajyoti. I don't have to take a vow. Because I don't want to do it. But those who are impersonalists, sometimes they have to take a vow in front of their guru. Can you imagine? Because that's actually recognition that it's more attractive. You only take vows to do something when there'd be a tendency to do it. I mean, I don't have to take a vow not to jump off the building. Right? Or to eat dirt. You know, I take a vow today. You know, what are the five regular principles? Don't eat no dirt. Because then, you know, who's going to eat dirt? But the things you would be attracted to, you know, like I mentioned oftentimes, the four regulated principles, that's why we pick things that people are attracted to as far as the four regular principles. No meat, fish, eggs, no gambling, no intoxication, no illness, and sex. So the impersonalists sometimes say, I was shocked to hear this. Was that Maha Mantra? You heard that too? He was there with me. I've taken a vow not to chant the Lord's holy names. So, anyway, I've had it. I mean, I didn't laugh at that point. I said, yeah, I understand. So, sometimes you have to be empathic. Things like that. My guru told me not to chant Krishna's names. I follow my guru. So, then... Actually, quite interesting. So that's a satsang. And then it mentions here something that's sometimes taken out of context, like in Prabhupada's purport, sense gratification through the association of women. It's not that women are necessarily bad, but the sense gratification when one associates with the opposite sex, with women with men or men with women. So sometimes people take that out of context and say that women are like poisoned. So we don't want people to do that. Anyway, so people are interested in sense gratification with the opposite sex. So these are types of asat sangha. So when one begins to associate with asat sangha people, you know, people who are actually asat sangha, the sanghis, because that's the personal way to express it, then material desires will develop in your heart. And that association can take the form of food, it can take the form of hearing music, it could take the form even of touching someone. You know, because karanam guna sangasya, because the modes of nature are there. Anyway, so that's another reason. And another reason is that devotees may develop desires because they commit offenses. You know, that's another big reason. Or they become overcome with the byproducts of bhakti. You know, you commit offenses and then your taste for chanting diminishes like this. And then, on the other hand, then we see devotees who are able to continue their renunciation. Why? Why are they able to continue? Because they've been strict in their chanting. Another reason is, you know, you find people who are naturally renounced, even when they just join the Krishna conscious movement, and they don't really have to do anything to get that renunciation. It's because of past lives. Yeah, past lives. I just, like my, not to say anything about myself, but I'll just give an example that before I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement, you know, I flew to Europe to try to see Europe, you know, whatever, you know, the culture. Just like you hear all about these tours of Europe you can do and see all these things. So I thought, you know, I'll see Europe, you know, the Eiffel Tower and the, was it Champs-Élysées, right? Is that how you pronounce it? Champs-Élysées. So, I thought, I said, Arc de Triomphe. Is that how you say it? So I thought I'd go there. But then after one day there, I was bored. It was just boring. I thought, you know, I'm really going to experience something different. See. So people travel all around the world. But a devotee just doesn't, he gets bored with the material world. He's nirupeksha. He's not interested in going here, going there. What will you see anyway? Like we were talking about the other day of going scuba diving, things like that, like seeing different types of fish. I mean, Shobhari Muni, he was seeing fish, and then because of that, his material desires developed. He committed an offense also to Garuda. That's a different... So that's actually proves the point about committing offenses, material desires developed. So, in other words, if we want to maintain or even develop the spirit of renunciation, renunciation is the... It's actually the wealth of the Brahmin class. Why is it the wealth? Because it makes you happy. Because if bhukti mukti siddhi kam sakalaya shanta, Krishna bhaktin nishkam atayiva shanta. As Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, if one wants bhukti, material sense gratification, bhukti, liberation, bhukti mukti, or some position of power in this world, siddhi kam, sakalaya shanta, his mind will be disturbed. If you have a disturbed mind, you can't be happy, right? Unless you have a peaceful mind, you can't be happy. Of course, in the spiritual world, their minds aren't peaceful, but their minds are agitated by Krishna. That's a different thing. But if you have your mind materially agitated, if you're desiring different things, how are you going to be peaceful? How are you going to be happy if you're not peaceful? Anyway, so these are some of the points. We remain strict, avoid bad association. Chant with attention, avoid the offenses in chanting, and then even if we're not renounced right now, even if we have all material desires, like Dhruva Maharaj, our desires will disappear naturally and we'll become happy. We're just talking about becoming happy. We're not talking about torturing you by giving up your whatever material thing gives you your jollies. We're talking about you becoming happy is the point. We want you to be happy and we want to be happy. And we're giving you the process for doing that. So all glories to Srila Prabhupada. On that happy note of renunciation. Radhika Lokananda ki jai.